Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. You know, as we've been talking about for a while, you see the explosion of the Me Too movement and women saying, you know what, I've had enough of you know what, I'm not putting up with it anymore. And I've been saying for years, the way that this should have gone down years ago is you should have organized. Join unions, stop workplace harassment, and, you know, the whole just say no thing, fight that. I like it. It's one of these things where, as I've said for years, you need the power of numbers and the power of organizing, which is why I've asked Josh on Fry to come talk with us. She's written a great couple of pieces, one on how to combat sexual harassment in the workplace and another one on the policies that we may need to do just that. Jocelyn, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
You know, this is, I got to be honest, as a guy, this is kind of a tough subject because, to be honest, you know, we're kind of the reason for all this, I would argue.
Well, you know, I think it's a hard subject for a lot of folks, which is why we're still dealing with it, you know, almost 30 years after sexual harassment was declared illegal. And, you know, it's important for men to engage just like women. You know, the reality is that sexual harassment is not just a women's issue. You know, if you look at the data, while it is certainly true, most of the claims are brought by women, there's also a significant chunk that are brought by men. So I think it's important for everybody to take the issue on as their responsibility.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, I don't think anyone wants to be, obviously not the victim, but they don't want to be the person who's harassing someone. I don't think most people want to be that. There's part of me that thinks some of the societal norms that we've grown up with is part of this, and you know, some of the the way our grandparents and our parents, you know, kind of push things along, that's part of it as well, don't you think?
You know, I think that's a piece of it. You know, I always start by saying, you know, even though sexual harassment has the word sex in it, it's really not about sex, and it's about power. It's about the misuse and abuse of power. So I think as a threshold matter, it's important for people to get that people who are really engaged in sexual harassment, at the end of the day, are people who are really trying to leverage and misuse their power in a way that's illegal and discriminatory. That being said, you're absolutely right. Our norms and culture has changed enormously, and what may have been tolerated 10, 15, 20, or 30 years ago is something that we now reject. And so I think they're both things that are happening simultaneously.
Because we hear a lot about, you know, well, now we can't flirt around anymore, and now, you know, all of that, we're going to have to put men and women in different areas, and there, you know, there's some segregation. I've had friends say, maybe that's what we need to do, and I don't have the answers. But you've got some ideas.
Well, I don't think we need to, you know, segregate people, nor do I think we need to limit the ability of people to engage, you know, in a social manner. I think that really what this conversation is about is when it comes to sexual harassment, what's proper in the workplace and what's not. And, you know, when you start talking about how do you combat sexual harassment in the workplace, you really have to think through, you know, what are the norms that we expect in the workplace today? This is about modern workplaces where people should be respected equally. And it starts with, you know, when I talked about the piece that you referenced, I talked about zero tolerance policies and leadership from the top, and you know, making sure that the rules that are in place are enforced vigorously. Like, these are sort of obvious things, but you know, our times have changed, and we need to understand that our workplaces are not necessarily you know, the same as you know social interactions outside of work. Those are two different things.
Should you even see? It's always been my view: you never date at work. You never get involved with anybody you work with because it never ends well and it never goes well.
Well, you know, I think, you know, I understand why people take that position. There certainly are employers who have specific rules about that. From my perspective, it's less about having those types of rigid rules, but just understanding the difference between operating in the workplace and operating outside of work. And the reality is that, you know, if a relationship happens at work, there can be confusion, there can be disagreements, and what what people, you know, may say this is a consensual situation, but years later someone says, you know, I really didn't like it because it was my supervisor. You know, I think those are the risks. And so anybody in a work situation should be thoughtful about whether or not any sort of romantic relationship makes sense, particularly if there's a difference in terms of power or the level of employee.
Yeah, especially if you're dating your boss. I mean, there's, again, nothing there. Because as you point out, this is about power. And, you know, so how does it work then if you're talking about sexual harassment among peers? I mean, because, you know, a lot of the stories that I've heard is, you know, a coworker was bothering me. That's not really about power. That's just about, you know, somebody who was chasing after somebody else. Is that considered, you know, part of this? And how do we deal with something like that?
Absolutely. I mean, this is why one of the things that needs to happen is that people need to understand, you know, very clearly the difference between, you know, what the law prohibits and what it doesn't. You know, coworkers can harass each other. It's a different type of power differential. You know, there's some data that shows, for example, that even when women rise up within their organizations and achieve a level of, you know, leadership and seniority, they can be even targeted for greater levels of harassment because they have achieved a level of power, right? They could, and it could be a different type of harassment. It's not simply that it's sexual in nature. It could be sex-based. They could be demeaned or talked about. Women can't do these types of jobs, disrespected, right? So harassment has different forms, and the power differential can work in a lot of different ways. And so what people should be focused on is what type of conduct is considered illegal. Is it sex-based? Is it unwelcome? Is it hostile? Is it severe? Is it pervasive? Is it something that is interfering with ability of a person to do their job? Those are the measures that people need to look at to determine, is this harassment and is it something that I should not be engaged in?
Yeah, I mean, but here's the question, and I've had construction worker friends who say that, you know, there have been women who have come on the job and they just can't do it. Physically, they can't lift, you know, 100-pound bags of cement and climb ladders, and there's that kind of mindset. But by saying something like that, is that considered part of what you're talking about? Because, look, I've had women tell me there are jobs that I can't do. I don't take offense by it. I agree with them. There's a lot of things I can't do, and more importantly, a lot of things I don't want to do. So how do you balance that? Because what I'm trying to get to is I'm trying to figure out where we're going.
Right.
I don't have all the answers, but I have to ask a bunch of questions. And to find out which direction we're looking at, what problems there are. Because look, I'm an old white guy. I've never been sexually harassed. I would have never tolerated it. If someone would have given me a hard time, you know, chances are I would have gone off on them. So this is a dynamic that as a white guy I just don't get.
Right. Well, I mean, I think where we start is said earlier is really understanding the difference between what the law prohibits and what it doesn't. The reality is that there are lots of critical, nasty, harsh things that people can say, and it's unfortunate they shouldn't say them, but they're not illegal, right? Like the law is pretty clear when it comes to sexual harassment that in order to have some level of liability, that there are some certain factors that need to happen. As you know, as I said, it needs to be unwelcome. It has to be sexual or sex-based. It either has to be a situation where it's like a term or condition of your employment. It interferes with your job in a meaningful way. It's hostile. It's severe. You know, it's specifically designed so that it weeds out things that are, even if they're bad or uncomfortable, are not at the level of severity that would can be considered a violation of the law. So that's the first thing. And, you know, I would say it's really critical for any employer to do regular education of their employees about this is what's permissible and this is what isn't. I think in terms of sort of commentary about people's relative experiences or ability to do the job, it's all in how it's said and how it's delivered, right? Like if your statement is women can't do this work, that's problematic. if the statement is that, you know, we need certain types of skills and some people can do this and some people can't, you know, that's a different type of a statement. But what you can't make is broad generalizations about
right.
people because of their gender or their race.
Okay, I mean, it makes sense. But, you know, at the end of this, I mean, look, I've got two daughters, and I don't want them to have any barriers or any, you know, harassment or any of the things that of the stories that I've heard. Because I got to be honest, you read some of these stories of the people who have come forward and bravely shared their stories, and it's heartbreaking, it's angering, and you know, look, I want no part of anyone's daughter or any woman to have to go through that. So I think now is a time to have these conversations, as uncomfortable as they are.
Right. I think that's absolutely right. And that's really to your point about where we need to go. And, you know, we do need to think about what are the types of steps that we can take to make sure that the workplace, whether it's for your daughters or your sons or spouses or friends, are ones where people can be successful as they want to be. And these types of barriers really have no place anymore. So, you know, that's what, you know, we've been trying to focus on and talking about, you know, concrete measures, making sure that people have good information, that they have policies, that they're not retaliated against, that the laws are enforced. You know, these are things that policymakers can take action on immediately to really start making a difference in the workplace for
right,
workers.
So your focus mostly on the workplace. If someone had a bad date and you know, things didn't, you know, go, you know, one way or the other, you know, are we talking about that, or are we simply talking about workplace stuff?
Well, you know, I think that's an important point because, you know, in the broader conversation about the Me Too movement, you know, a lot of these issues have been brought in. So it's not just about sexual harassment in the workplace. It's also about issues around sexual assault and, you know, dating violence. And it's important to distinguish those cases. They're both important, but they're not the same. The laws are different and how we handle them are different. But all of it needs to be part of, you know, I think a much broader public education effort so that we are able to make good choices and distinguish between things that are violations of the law and things that are not.
Right, because, you know, there was just this story of, you know, there was a dating thing that I forget the actor's name or whatever, if he was an author or whatever. And, you know, as I was reading through this, and I'm in no way trying to, you know, demean the woman who came forward, but I kept reading through this and I go, you know, if you were going farther than you wanted to, why didn't you just say stop, get up, leave? Because this is what I'm trying to teach my daughters is, you know, if something like this happens, you put a stop to it immediately. You don't allow things that make you uncomfortable to go forward. Or is that just a male point of view?
Well, I don't think it's a male point of view, but I think what a lot of these cases are showing is that even if we think that intellectually in those situations, it's hard for victims to actually do some of that. If a victim can, that's great. But a lot of times, because of the person that they're with, you know, particularly if it's a person who's famous or powerful, it's hard to do something that you think could impact your career or your future opportunities. And that's just a practical reality. And it really goes back to the earlier point that you raised about the importance of creating a broader environment where if a person comes forward, that they're actually believed and their ramifications, right? Like, you don't want to be a situation where people just disbelieve you or say you were asking for it or it was what you were wearing or why did you go. That's what victims are concerned about, and that's why we see data that suggests as many as 70% of sexual harassment victims don't even report it. So it's not just about communicating to the potential victim that they need to be able to speak up, but it also means making sure that when they do, that we support them and we back them and we empower them.
Yeah, and the empowerment part is where I was going because, you know, again, I go back to my mindset, and I've actually had that thrown back at me in another way, saying that by me saying that you should be empowered to stand up and say no and walk out and all of that stuff, that's blaming the victim as well. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that it's important for any victim to feel empowered to speak up. But I think that what's not good is if we think that's the only answer to the question, right? Like the reason that people don't speak up is because we have a broader context where sexual harassment, sexual assault victims have not been believed. So if we're going to actually say to those who are potential victims, speak up and speak out, then we also need to be doing a whole lot of other things to make sure that those folks are backed up. We need to make sure that there's strong penalties and disincentives for people to engage in that conduct in the first place. We need, you know, greater levels of enforcement and accountability. The answer can't solely be about victims, because it sort of ignores where the problem is arising in the first place.
There you go. If you want to take a look at the articles, From Politics to Policy, Turning the Corner on Sexual Harassment, and also How to Combat Sexual Harassment in the Workplace, we'll get links at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Jocelyn Fry's name. Jocelyn, it was great talking with you. I appreciate you sharing a little bit of your thoughts and listening to my ramblings.
Oh, well, that's great, and happy to do it. Thanks so much for having me.
Good stuff. Thank you so much. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You got thoughts, questions, comments? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Think of all the roads. Think of all the crossings. Taking steps is easy. Standing still is hard. Remember all their faces. Remember all their voices. Everything is different the second time.